Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Wednesday, August 8th, and Ed Stefanski's front office continues to take shape. This is your boy, Matt Shook, a sports writer here in the Motor City, covering the NBA and other things for the Associated Press and the Detroit News, a Pistons follower my whole life and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thank you for making us part of your daily routine. Today we're going to tell you all you need to know about Sachin Gupta, the new analytics guru for the Pistons. We're also going to be taking a step back and give some thoughts on the front office as a whole that's been constructed by Ed Stefanski, and another Christmas day off for the Detroit Pistons, thankfully in some ways, not thankfully in others. Obviously no surprise there, as the Pistons aren't exactly a marquee team of the NBA these days, but we'll run down Pistons history with Christmas games. Yes, there used to be a time that that was a thing for Detroit Pistons and their fans, but check me out on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Also give us a follow on the Facebook page at Locked On Pistons-MattShook. We've also got the Locked On Pistons Twitter account at Locked On Pistons. With that one, I just try to pass along anything that I feel is noteworthy on Pistons news or things around the internet that you need to know about. Just a lot of retweets there from Pistons land. So a valuable source of information from the Twitter account as well. But first, welcome to Detroit. Sachin Gupta comes from the Daryl Morey tree and off of the Sam Hinkie branch of that tree as well. Bill Simmons calls Daryl Morey Dork Elvis, and Hinkie is even more of a deity among a smaller segment of NBA stat hounds. So we'll call Hinkie maybe Nerd Jesus there. But last year, Gupta, the new hire for Ed Stefanski's front office, was with Daryl Morey as a special advisor with the Houston Rockets. And you wonder sometimes if fans and folks on Twitter spend more time coming up with fake trades than front office people might do in their offices of NBA teams. Like, are we even sure that Jeff Bauer knew how to use the NBA trade machine? Well, Gupta, he used to work for ESPN and actually helped develop the trade machine. I don't know if it was his baby completely, depending on who you're reading as far as the development of the trade machine, which is a big part of many of our listeners' lives, I know. So here's guessing that Gupta not only knows the NBA CBA and salary cap trade procedures backwards and forwards, but he was instrumental in developing it and turning it into one of the more popular tools that fans across the world use come February time and off-season time and all that good stuff as well. Gupta started with ESPN. He went to the Rockets in 2006 for his first NBA job after meeting after meeting Daryl Morey at a speech that Daryl was giving to some MIT students, Gupta being one of them. Gupta ended up going to Philly in 2013, and shortly after that became vice president of basketball operations, the number two guy for Sam Hinkie in Philadelphia during the process. Gupta has a bachelor's degree in computer science and electrical engineering from MIT, and that's which I thought was kind of weird because I didn't see him in any of my classes there when I was at MIT going to school there as well. Although, to be fair, I was always kind of in the back of those classes, maybe kind of showing up late, trying to pick up some of the computer science and electrical engineering chicks, maybe in the back of the class, or maybe sleeping off hangovers from all the computer science and electrical engineer keg parties that we had out there in the Boston area. Gupta also got his MBA from the Stanford School of Business, graduated high school in 2000, so that puts him one grade older than me, which means he's about 36 years old, something like that. Also figured out that he ran track in high school in a two-miler, according to his hometown paper, the Lowell Sun, out in Massachusetts. 2 miles, that's a tough distance. One of those ones that a little bit of sprinting there. It's not like a huge distance that is all distance running, but a little bit of fast track on the 2 miles as well. So if you had any questions about his endurance or go-gettitiveness, which I just made up right now, then that two-miler is a pretty good indication of that. I always respect, by the way, quick tangent, I always kind of respect those guys who were 400 or 800-meter guys, and I didn't run track at all, so obviously I'm a fat, lazy idiot, so that's not even a consideration for me. But those guys who can run that 800-meter, it's such a long race because you have to run very fast the whole time because it's short enough where you can't conserve a lot of energy, but then you got to give that big kick in the last 200 meters or so. That's the toughest race out there probably, but 400 real tough too. So that's my thoughts on track and field for the day. But back to the Pistons. Check out a nice piece that I passed along on the Twitter account, the Locked On Pistons Twitter account right now, from early 2017 from Philly Magazine about Gupta, from Derek Bodner, who covers the Philadelphia 76ers for The Athletic now, and who doesn't cover things for The Athletic now at this point. But Gupta, apparently a trade machine hound, a trade hound, throwing out ideas and getting involved in Philly trades that netted all sorts of future assets and pick swaps, and using the cap space that they had at the time to pick up future assets. It seems like really that Gupta's more of a trade guru than a systems guru, a database guru, although he can do that stuff and prove that over the years, certainly at ESPN as well. But, you know, even as a lower-level staffer with the Houston Rockets early on when Hinkie and Morey were both there, that Gupta was kind of unasked for, just gave a lot of trade proposals that, you know, one of those guys that we see you guys on Twitter that are throwing out those trade proposals all the time, and we love that. But he was one of those guys, except he was delivering it to the people that mattered and the people that were running the Houston Rockets at the time. Certainly seems like a nice asset for the Pistons organization, and thinking in a lot of ways that the Stan Van Gundy era certainly was not, and definitely more than previous regimes to that were for the Detroit Pistons. And some other notes from old staffers from the Stan Van Gundy era. Vince Ellis of the Detroit Free Press had a story yesterday where he was passing along some of these moves that were made by some of the former regime, former associate head coach Bob Baier, who was kind of the number two man on the sidelines to Stan Van Gundy. He will be an assistant coach with the Oklahoma City Thunder coming up this year. And former director of scouting Adam Glesner in the front office with that Stan Van Gundy and Jeff Bauer last year, he is joining the San Antonio Spurs. And also former Pistons front office executive J.R. Holden will be a scout with the Philadelphia 76ers. And as we know, Pat Garrity, who was an assistant general manager under Jeff Bauer, still on staff with the Detroit Pistons, and chief of staff from last year, Andrew Loomis, is also back with the front office of Ed Stefanski and the new regime. And we're going to size up how Gupta fits in with the rest of the front office as a whole up next here on Locked On Pistons. But as we've talked about, looking for more advertisers. So if you know anyone, pass along the leads, pass along the names. And if you know of or your company wants to reach that key demo of men between the ages of 18 to 44, provincial Pistons fans that probably have ties to Metro Detroit and an interest in spending their dollars locally, you should be sponsoring this podcast. 98% men, 80% of those between the ages of 18 to 44, all sorts of daily dedicated listeners. So if you're interested in sponsoring Locked On Pistons podcast, getting the name of your business and the plight of your business out there, email me at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
Sachin Gupta is the latest name to join the Pistons front office under Ed Stefanski. As we've talked about, it was a bit of an uncomfortable start for Stefanski, as the team's press release announcing his hire simply billed Stefanski as the guy who would develop the structure of the team, maybe develop the organizational chart, so to speak. And it wasn't really even clear that he would be involved in basketball decisions at all, more of a consultant around the process for owner Tom Gores, identifying who gets the power. In time, it became apparent that this was much more than that, as during his time figuring out who should get the power, Ed Stefanski apparently thought, you know what? I should just get all the power. It was a bold move, but to his credit, the moves have been solid as we sit here on the outside, kind of analyzing as much as we can about the Pistons front office and front offices around the NBA. It's an unorthodox system in that we still sit here on August 8th, the front office seemingly pretty much intact, although the Pistons haven't signaled officially that they're done making hires or anything, but they could be, and there's no president of basketball operations, no general manager. Although I would imagine at some point Stefanski might get named president of basketball operations, but who knows at this point? The Pistons are kind of a wild card with the process of what they're doing. But under Stefanski, who is still labeled as the special advisor to owner Tom Gores, you now have the assistant general managers. You have Malik Rose, who handles player development, comes from the championship background of the Popovich era in San Antonio, did a nice job in his short time with the Atlanta front office, including an Executive of the Year award in the G League. You got Greg Polinsky, who was with the Brooklyn Nets and knows Stefanski from his time back then, the director of player personnel. He oversees scouting as well. You still have Pat Garrity. You still have Andrew Loomis from the Stan Van Gundy era. Now you add Sachin Gupta, kind of running the show for the analytics. You got Sammy Gelfand from Golden State, who has the analytics background there. Is he technically a front office guy or a coaching staff guy? It's not. We're not really sure about that. I guess it doesn't really matter. Shades of gray there, but it sounds like he'll be courtside with the staff of Dwayne Casey, maybe giving Coach Casey some in-game tips like he did with Steve Kerr with the champs, kind of a melding of the front office and the coaching staff there. These are not huge, big-name splashes, not the Tom Gores type of Hollywood moves where you throw a bunch of money at a premium name, like the Blake Griffin trade, for instance, but kind of more under the radar, guys with some pedigree and guys with a little bit of background and a little bit of connections around the league that specialize in the job that they're supposed to do with the Pistons. Now, the key here will be how Ed Stefanski gets all these wheels to be in motion. When you talk about the Sam Hinkie analytics front office in Philadelphia, we talked about early in the show how Sachin Gupta was the number two man in Philadelphia. Now, obviously, with that team, you are pretty much all numbers driven. You don't have a lot of guys who are players in the league, who have an advanced scouting background. So it's kind of a choosing your lane as an organization, going strictly with analytics, going strictly with numbers. The Pistons are trying to have it all ways, which is a good thing. It's a kind of a big project for Ed Stefanski to put together. And really it goes back to what he was initially hired as a guy who's trying to make the wheels all turn in the right way. And he seems to be a guy who knows a lot of these guys from his time around the league and also put together this complicated staff, really. You got the Malik Rose part of the staff, which has a player with an NBA background who's been around some front offices, but you know tries to bring some of that Popovich era stuff there. And then you have now these numbers guys that are in, and to meld all those together is going to be a big challenge for Ed Stefanski, because as the Philadelphia Magazine article pointed out that I read and passed along about Sachin Gupta today, you're only really making, you know, three or four big choices throughout the course of a season of a front office. You got all these guys together. You're doing all this work. You're working the 80 hours, as we hear about. I don't know how much these guys work, really, and I'm sure it is a lot. But you're doing all this work so that you can make a few big decisions, a few small decisions. You make some draft picks every season. There's not a whole lot of decisions to make. And you need to compile all this data, compile all this input, compile all this work that all these people are doing, and make the right decisions all the time. A side note, it's also a diverse staff, which is great, obviously, in the city of Detroit to be mobile. You know, we haven't really seen any women, by the way. We keep saying all these guys together, all these guys that Stefanski knows. There hasn't been any women. I know that's more of an NBA problem, a sports problem, professional sports problem as a whole. Would have been nice to get maybe a woman in a prominent position, but there aren't the amount of candidates that you would hope for, and you don't want to be the one giving a token handout to a woman out there. But hopefully that comes someday sooner than rather than later for the Detroit Pistons front office and or coaching staff as well. But side note, with the hire of Gupta yesterday on Tuesday, it's nice to have a sophisticated front office, and that's what we weren't getting for the last few seasons with the ridiculous consolidation of power for Stan Van Gundy. Already, we've seen the Pistons kind of cleverly nickel and dime some cap space by signing Jose Calderon and Zaza Pachulia, more expensive veterans who actually saved cap space in comparison to Eric Moreland and Dwight Bikes, the salary cap mechanism where players who are veterans under league minimum contracts are only charged on the cap for second-year league minimum guys. So even though Pachulia and Calderon are going to be making more money than Moreland and Bikes would have, the Pistons are charged under the cap for less money. So that freed up the amount of money that they needed to squeeze Bruce Brown in, to squeeze Kyrie Thomas in on their rookie deals and still stay under the luxury tax, although they're well over the salary cap yet again. Now, this isn't exactly MIT-level stuff right there that I just pointed out, but it's more sophisticated moves than Stan Van Gundy ever made, perhaps save the Marcus Morris trade with the Phoenix Suns, which is a pretty savvy move on the front office's part. But that's not what Stan Van Gundy does. He's a coach. He should be making sophisticated coaching moves, which he did at times, but not necessarily enough as the years poured on and the losses poured on in these last 2 years of the Stan Van Gundy era here in Detroit. But a few of these hires show that the Pistons and Ed Stefanski continue to be making moves in the right direction. And here on Locked On Pistons, we are pretty pleased with the work that Easy Ed Stefanski is doing with the Detroit Pistons so far. 0-0 on the court, though, so we'll see how this all pans out in the coming months. We'll be talking Christmas in July up next with some of the Christmas Day memories for the Pistons as the schedule for Christmas Day will be announced, and we'll not have a Detroit flavor once again this year. We'll be talking about that next here on the Locked On Pistons, a proud member of the Locked On Pistons podcast, a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day. And as you know, Detroit sports fans, it is football week. The Lions are headed out to Oakland for a preseason game late on Friday night. The Locked On Lions podcast with Matt Derry of Detroit Radio is a daily look at the Leos, and you should check it out here on the Locked On Podcast Network. But the NBA is officially announcing the Christmas Day schedule today. Amazing that we're talking about Christmas already. According to the New York Times, the schedule is going to be the Milwaukee Bucks and the Knicks in MSG at noon. And we all know that it's ridiculous that the Knicks keep getting these Christmas days. But in some ways, I respect Adam Silver and the league just letting them play at Madison Square Garden on Christmas without the pretense of fairness or spreading it around the league. It's a meritocracy as far as TV ratings and prestige of Madison Square Garden goes. No problem with that here on this corner. The Thunder and the Rockets at 3 o'clock in a matchup I don't really care about. Not as excited as a national NBA fan outside of those fan bases to watch those teams play against each other these days. The 76ers and the Boston Celtics at 5:30. Of course, Carmelo Anthony playing against his former team with Houston and Oklahoma City there. 76ers and Boston at 5:30. Good teams, obviously, but teams as Pistons fans we've grown to hate, so not one I'm all excited about either. The Lakers and the Warriors, LeBron taking on the two-time defending champs, 8 o'clock start Eastern time there. Blazers and the Jazz at 10:30 in the game that you're probably not going to be awake for. It's strange that feature game, that Lakers-Warriors 8 o'clock game, they used to put the big game on at 5:30 in the afternoon, but it was usually out west, so maybe it makes more sense to play that one a little bit later. I'm sure the powers that be at the NBA know what they're doing there in terms of ratings. Usually by 8 p.m. Eastern time, I'm out cold somewhere on Christmas, or maybe I napped earlier. But this is pretty much as expected as far as the list of games and teams that we'll be playing. But I'll say this again, like I did yesterday when we were talking about the Western Conference Las Vegas odds. It seems like there's less teams that I'd care to watch on a national level. Now, every team has some pretty good players. But as far as marquee can't-miss games and teams, obviously the Lakers will be the team that everyone's watching probably all season, especially early on in the season. And but other than that, I mean, you're kind of growing a little bit about Golden State. Maybe seeing how Gordon Hayward fits in with the Celtics will be an interesting storyline early. But as far as interesting storylines that I do want to watch, where is Toronto? Kawhi Leonard can't get on Christmas Day, but I saw some Raptors media people on Twitter, and rightfully so, they're saying, "Thank God, who wants to work on Christmas?" But I would have liked to have seen Kawhi versus the Spurs on Christmas Day. But, you know, maybe the NBA and Greg Popovich got in their ear and said, we don't want to make even more of a big deal out of that than we have to. And then Pop probably at this point in his career probably doesn't want to work on Christmas anyway. He did one day fairly recently, well, not recently, I guess about 10, 15, 13 years ago now, as the Pistons will not have to work on Christmas, but they did have to play on Christmas when they were good, since 2005 was the last time they did play. Since the move from Fort Wayne to Detroit in 1957, the Pistons are 7-16 on Jesus' birthday. They have a two-game winning streak going, so it sounds like that they have lost 16 of their first 21 games on Christmas Day up until the recent two-game winning streak for the Pistons. There was a six-game losing streak in the early days there that kind of skewed things, and we know that the Pistons as an organization pre-Bad Boys days was really bad, so you're padded by a lot of losses there. The Pistons' last time that they did play was 2005, two seasons after the 2004 title. So this was the 05-06 season. The Pistons played the Spurs on Christmas Day. This was a rematch of the finals from the year before, which the Spurs won in 7, in case you forgot. The Pistons were part of only two games that day. Back then, it wasn't an all-day affair like it is now. The Pistons were the first of the two against the Spurs, and the second was Shaq's first game with Miami against Kobe. Actually, his second year of games against Kobe when Shaq was with Miami. The Pistons won that game 85-70 against the Spurs, 18-8 after the first quarter, after the early start in Auburn Hills on Christmas Day. An amazingly going-to-work game when you look at the stats. Chauncey had 20 points. Ben grabbed 21 rebounds. I remember watching that game. It seemed like the Palace was rocking pretty well for a 12:30 start in the Motor City. Manu Ginobili was out, and he did not play in that one. The teams would meet in San Antonio a few weeks later. The Pistons would wax them 83-68 in another amazing final score, which is the exact same margin as that Christmas Day game, just 2 points off. The Pistons did play on Christmas the year before, too. That was 2004, so a few months after the championship in the 2003-04 season. The Pistons played at Indiana for a 12:30 start, winning the game 98-93. The teams came in at 12-12. Obviously, the storyline of that game was that it was about a month and a week after the Palace Brawl, the first time that the teams had met since the brawl in Auburn Hills, the malice at the Palace. Ron Artest and Steven Jackson were out with long suspensions for that one. Jermaine O'Neal was back for this game. Ben had already served his suspension and did play, although maybe this was during the appeal process and those suspensions would come later. I didn't look that up. But 25 for Rip in the win, 20 for Chauncey. I actually really don't remember this game, and I'm sure it's one that David Stern wasn't too pleased with the brawl storyline floating around his big Christmas showcase back then. And that was the game that was the precursor for the first Kobe versus Shaq Part 1, when Shaq was dealt to the Miami Heat in the offseason after the Pistons broke that team up in the 2004 Finals. A couple other memories to pass along. 2002, the Pistons played at Orlando against Grant Hill and Tracy McGrady on Christmas for a 2 o'clock start. The Pistons lost that one 104-99. Rip had 22 in the loss. Tracy McGrady had 46 points and 10 points and 15 rebounds for Grant Hill. This was the season in Orlando, the third season in Orlando for Grant Hill after the Pistons traded him down south. The teams would meet later that season in the first round. Orlando almost won. McGrady balled but blew the 3-1 lead. The Pistons would advance and get to the East Finals for the first of six times. Grant Hill did play in that Christmas Day game, but was out with an injury by the time the playoffs were rolled around. In 1996, Grant Hill was a member of the Pistons and for coach Doug Collins, and the Pistons lost on Christmas Day in Chicago 95-83 against Michael Jordan and the Bulls. 23 points for Jordan, 27 for Pippen. The Bulls were 25-3 after that game, one of the best teams of all time that finished 69-13, which was the fifth of six Michael Jordan titles in Chicago. The Bad Boys, they lost in Christmas in Chicago as well in 1990, losing 98-86, 37 for Michael Jordan that day. The teams would then meet in the East Finals for a Bulls sweep later that season, which led to the walkout at the Palace by Isaiah Thomas, Bill Laimbeer, and others. A couple others, 1987, the year the Pistons would fall in seven games to the Lakers. They would win, actually, in New York against the Knicks on Christmas Day, 91-87. And interestingly enough, the Pistons never did play on Christmas Day on seasons that they would go on to win the title. Their three championship years as a franchise, they never did play on Christmas Day during those days. Now, I think back in the day, the NBA was kind of more of a normal schedule. Whenever you happened to draw a Christmas Day game, it happened. Not like these contrived made-for-TV matchups that are happening right now. But before that day, the Madison Square Garden in 1987, the Pistons were 4-13 on Christmas Day. The team really sucked back in the day. So we don't need to relive all those. That's enough for today. So give us a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. Give us a like on the Facebook page at Locked On Pistons-MattShook. Thanks for going back to memory lane with me here with these Pistons Christmas Day lookbacks. But this has been your host, Matt Shook, for the Locked On Pistons podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone, and enjoy the rest of your day.